Yes, it's me. Oh, I was asked this morning, would this be my sixth last sermon? For those of you visiting, 3 weeks ago I spoke and I said, this is my fifth last sermon because I do speak seldom. But I've decided that it's wrong to do that. If God's going to let me speak twice in 4 weeks, we'll just call this my first beginning sermon for the rest of the time. As long as we keep having our other ministers sick or out of town or having tragedies in their life, I'll have opportunities to still be with you. I was asked to announce, and I do this with no authority in case it's wrong, there is no meeting at the church tonight. This was based on the fact that the announcement was made that the care group or the study groups would not be meeting, since this sermon is not one you want to discuss at home, so you'll just skip that. But also there'll be no meeting here, and I announce that because there's always confusion. We have some show up and some don't come, and that's the way it's going to be tonight. Now, if Joe shows up to teach, we'll just tell him we're sorry he should have been here for the announcement. Today I'm going to do what I want to do, which is to just tell you a story. You may have caught on from the songs that Jim picked out, but it's not a story, but it's many stories that all become one story. I'd not been here very long until someone spoke to me who was from one of the churches of Christ in the area, and they said, I hear that you don't preach the gospel. It kind of caught me off guard. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't understand that. They said, well, all you do is tell stories from the Old Testament. And I thought, well, that probably is true, because that's been a basis of my teaching a lot, is tell a story and bring a point from it. But I think when we talked for a while, I understood what they were saying, that a preacher is supposed to always be preaching the order of the church, how you get into being saved, how you remain or get thrown out, those things. And if that's the truth, I've never been a preacher, because that isn't what I do. I am a storyteller, whether I'm doing it the right way in sermons or perhaps the right way in counseling or perhaps the wrong way when my wife says, you've talked quite a bit in this group. But the fact of the matter is, I am a storyteller. And we're going to look at a story today. I want to tell you something. This is not a book of titles and chapters. This is a story. It is a story from what we know to be the beginning all the way through what we believe to be the end. And I know that we call the last book of the New Testament Revelations, but the truth is, this entire book is Revelations. It's revealing to us not only our history, but God's history with us. We don't know a whole lot about God. Almost everything we know comes here. We can look at the stars, and we can look at the earth, and we can look at the complexity of what we see and say, I believe there is a creator. Men all over the world, all over the centuries have done that, and they have found some form that they thought might be the God who was a creator. This is the only place where we find out who He really is. And so this is God's story from beginning to end, all the way from the first chapter of Genesis to the last chapter of the Revelation letter. And what is important to us in that, besides knowing the story of God, it's how we relate and how we should relate. And the two are not always the same. From our very earliest time, the written word that we study has been telling a story. God Himself is a storyteller, and His Son is a magnificent storyteller. We have literally chapters that are nothing but stories that He tells. Curtis has been talking about the kingdom. And Jesus was talking about the kingdom. And God was talking about the kingdom before they had any idea what He was talking about. Even when Jesus is talking about the kingdom, they have no idea what He's talking about. Perhaps today we know a little bit more about the kingdom, though I'm not sure that we have much understanding. There's still a lot of debate. Is the church the kingdom? Is the church part of the kingdom? Is the kingdom yet to come? Has the kingdom already come? We can spend the whole day talking about that. When we get through, none of us are real sharp about it. We just have opinions that we either heard, read, or made up for ourselves. And that's all right. But that's not what we're going to do this morning. The Old Testament is a continuing story, but the New Testament is where I want us to go. Jesus Christ describes the kingdom in so many different ways. And if you take all the different ways He describes it, you say, the kingdom is this, or the kingdom is that, or the kingdom is this. Yeah, it is, but that's not all there is to it. That's why He tells so many different stories. I hope that when you go away today, that what you'll remember is that you're reading stories when you read the Bible. That you're reading the story of God and man throughout history. That you're reading the story of man and his relationship to what he's supposed to be, and his comparison to what he very often is not. But that you'll get the idea so that you can hold on to it. My father taught me a great many things, some of them a little hard, but he taught me a great deal about speaking, and he said, there are several things you need to know. He told me, first of all, I was going to be a preacher, and I wasn't. He made me take a minor in Bible, and I didn't want to. I left college with a major in physical education because that's what I aimed to be. It didn't turn out that way. But the fact of the matter was, he said, when you're preaching, and I think, yeah, sure. But I learned from him so that when I did, I remember what he said. He said, you can use the same scripture every week and most people won't notice it. You can even use the same topic every week and most people won't remember. But you can't tell the same story twice because they remember the story you told. And they'll say, well, he just told that last week or last month or last year. And people... Rose Vinoy, bless her heart, has gone to be with God. But Rose kept everything down in her Bible, and she put topics and sermons of everything I did. And she would remind me on a Sunday, you spoke on that about 6 months ago. I'm glad most of you don't pay that much attention. But stories are good, and that's why I'm bringing this to you. I want you to think about it. This is just storytelling today. But I want you to carry it with you so it will be a part of something you do remember. I said we don't remember whole sermons very often. I'll give you a good example of that. I was going to work at the World's Fair in New York, going to spend 30 days up there representing the Church of Christ at the Protestant Orthodox Center. Nobody in the congregation at Fort Smith really felt like that they could take over the radio program. I did one every Sunday morning. And so I taped for the 3 Sundays. You know, I made that month work out, so I only missed 3 Sundays out of it. I taped for 3 Sundays, 3 sermons. I felt pretty good about that when I got back home. One of the elders was one of the first who talked to me on Sunday morning, and he said, that's the best series on baptism I've ever heard. And I said, series? He said, yes. And then he explained to me that he had listened all 3 Sundays and that it was the best series on baptism he'd ever heard. They played the same sermon 3 straight times. We might need to learn something from that, but that's just to tell you how we do and do not remember. When Jesus is talking about the kingdom, you thought I'd forgotten that, but I hadn't. I'll come back to that. When Jesus is talking about the kingdom, he's talking about descriptions of it, and one of the stories he tells is a mustard seed. Now, I was studying the mustard seed with some people not too long ago, and they said, I just don't understand that story. But the mustard seed is not the smallest of all seeds, and when it grows up, it's not a big tree. And I said, you weren't listening to the story, were you? You were looking for everything to be legalistic. Can I say that in this crowd without offending anybody? You were looking for it to be exactly, giving no license to story and poetry. I very often tell stories that are not altogether true, but they carry out what I want to do. My son Mark, one time when he was very small, after I told a story on a Sunday night, came up to me on the way home and said, "Dad, was that true or was that a preacher story?" And we know about those. So Jesus is telling a story, and it's not important whether the seed is the smallest or the tree is the largest. The importance is you take a very, very small thing and it becomes very large. What was that small thing? The kingdom. Over and over he's going to say, the kingdom is like a mustard seed. And so you go away and you may not remember a whole lot of things, but you know, if you're thinking about it, that the kingdom is something that is planted small and grows large because of the grace of God and the mercy of God. What's the kingdom worth? How do you measure the worth of the kingdom? Jesus tells us a number of different things, and I won't take them all. My two favorites. The kingdom is like a man who found a treasure in a field. When he realizes this, he goes and he sells everything he has and he goes and buys that field because everything he has is not worth what that field is worth. Now, we get into all kinds of questions about why he didn't tell the landowner, but that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is very simple. The kingdom is worth more than everything you've got, and the only way you're going to really get it is to give up everything you've got to purchase it. Now, Jesus bought it with his blood, and I understand that. But the story is this is how you get your part, is you give everything you have to it. I like the other part of the story better. The kingdom of heaven is like a merchant who found a pearl of great price. And he went away and sold everything he had, and he bought that pearl. Well, you think, that's putting all your eggs in one basket. That's not what the story is about. The story, once more, is about when you find something that is really worthwhile, you give everything you have to make that a part of you. That's what the kingdom is, and that's what you do. If you really believe in the kingdom and you understand what the kingdom means, you know where you are in the kingdom, then everything you are is something you're willing to give up so that you can have that pearl of great price. You want to know about kingdom people? Well, I could say kingdom people are those who have heard and they have believed and they have confessed and they have been baptized and they live a reasonable life after that. That's true. But that's not what Jesus says. That's not against what Jesus says. It's just not what he says. He says, you want to know about people in the kingdom? They love God with everything they have and they love their neighbor as themselves. You all know the story. They're trying to trap him with what one commandment is the commandment, and whatever he says, they'll say, well, you don't think these are important. So he brings it all together. Jesus has a way of doing that. See, before Moses, there were all kinds of ideas about what God requires. Moses comes and he goes up on the mountain, and he comes down with the stones with 10 commandments. And now you know what God requires. You have 10 commandments that he gives you, and these are the central theme that everything else hangs on. Now you come to Jesus and you look for the 10 commandments. He said, really, there's only 2. Number 1 is love God with all you've got and your neighbor as yourself. This is an answer to who is my neighbor. Well, not willing to let it stand like that, the man trying to trap him, I'm going to say it, the lawyer, the last time I said the lawyer, I had 2 of them come out and say, I wish you wouldn't use us for examples. So I said, took it out of the Bible. I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to put it on anybody. But the lawyer said, who is my neighbor? And you know that story. He's telling you who the neighbor is, but that's not all he's telling you. He's telling you who you are. You're a religious person that's on your way to services, and you see someone by the side of the road, and you're either scared of what's happening because a man has been beaten, or you're too busy on your way and can't give up the time. Whatever it is, you're not doing the right thing. You say, well, that's not me. I'm not that kind of a person. Well, actually, you know, a priest goes by, and a Levite who's also a part of the priesthood goes by. And then, this is one of the things I want you to remember. God uses extravagant examples in the stories that are told. So Jesus, God, does that. And so instead of anything that they could imagine to the answer of who is my neighbor, he says, and a Samaritan. That's as bad a word as he could speak in the presence of the Jews at that particular time. A Samaritan. And he goes ahead and tells the beauty of the Samaritan story. We even today call him the Good Samaritan. But it doesn't impact us like it would of them, because this exaggeration of the one person he's going to show, he who does good, was intended to get their attention. And it still gets our attention because of the goodness and the way. Were you on your way to church and had to pass somebody by? I've done that. I've been in church and something would happen, get a message on my phone that Tilly had just died. But I should have said, I'm sorry, but I've got an elders meeting after this and that's very important. But that never crossed my mind. It wouldn't have yours either. I went to see about Tilly's family. That's what we do. We have an order of things, and the order is, what's the need? That's what we do. What's the need? And that's what we're supposed to do. I'll look one time. Because everybody knows I preach short, but sometimes I get wound up. And I have to check myself every once in a while, because I've already told you five things I didn't intend to. And that just happens when I'm up. I didn't get to last week or week before last, so you just pick up a few things as you go along. Now then, I want to tell you one more thing about the kingdom that I think Jesus tells. It's extremely important. And in the churches of Christ, we have not always understood it very well. I do not say that critically. I just say that as a part of my own growing up and a part of who I am today. He tells a story of two men. He very often does this. There's an either-or thing going on. This is in response to the fact that the Pharisees are being critical about Jesus being with sinners. That's what he's going to bring to them, but they're not ready for that yet, and he can't say to them, don't you know that you're hypocritical? And that the sinners are who God's calling? He says that a few times, but that's not what he does this time. He tells them a story, because with a story, there's a hook. You know that. You tell the story, and then the gotcha's there, and all of a sudden you've been buying into it, and now you're faced with it, and you can't do anything about it, because he said, that's really true, isn't it? So he tells a story we call the prodigal son. And here is this one guy who is staying home, being who he needs to be, taking care of what the father would want him to do, and the other who says, I want everything that's coming to me and I'm leaving. And so he does it and he goes off. And of course, Jesus, here's this example of overtelling. What does he do? He takes a young Jewish boy from a wealthy family. And where does he leave him? Tell me. In the pig pen. You can't get any worse than that. There's no more exaggeration that would make that story hang in the minds of this Jewish audience. Here is this boy who we know was wrong, doing wrong, did wrong, and he ends up in the pig pen. That's where he belongs. That's exactly where you ought to put a Jewish boy who's done wrong. But that isn't where Jesus puts him. He has this little statement, and I love the statement. It's a sermon in itself, and you're lucky I'm not going to do the whole bit. When he came to himself. Have you ever done that? I'll bet you have. Some of us don't get around to it as often as we need to. But you just look around and one day you think, I'm on the wrong track with this, whatever it is. He came to himself and he said to himself, it's all right to talk to yourself when you're saying the right things. He said, in my Father's house, the servants have enough and to spare. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to swallow my pride because I am in desperate straits. And I'm going to go home to my Father, and I'm going to say to him, Father, I have sinned against God, and I've sinned against you, and I'm not worthy to be called your son. Would you please let me just be a servant in this family? But you know the story. While he was yet a long way off, the Father sees him coming. Now, I tell you, I've raised some children, and I've made a few mistakes, and they turned out much better than I expected from what I did. But I know where I would have been at that particular point in my life. I would not have run out to meet him. I would have let him come and go to the back door and let the servants come and tell me, your son's out here. And I would say, I don't have a son. He left. Now, it wouldn't be because I didn't love him, but that would be the way I would see. You have to let him be punished some for this so that he'll understand how significant it is. And then after a while, when he's been a servant and he shows that he really is humble now and that he really has changed, then one day I would say, I've been watching you, and you can be my son again. But that isn't what this father did. While he was yet a long way off, he runs out, he hugs him, he says, let's get some clothes and put on this boy, put a ring on his finger, that's significant to the Jewish mind there, kill the fatted calf. We love that story, but that's not the story. The story is the brother who comes and says, you never killed a fatted calf for me. That's where the story came from. The story is about the Pharisee and the Sadducee who didn't want Jesus associating with sinners, and he's saying to them after he gets the hook into them, and they think, isn't that beautiful? That's who you are. You're the elder brother. Now you can't get rid of it because you know the story. You have to live with it. And that's what stories do. The last story. Everything that happens in the Old Testament is working toward this one point. Everything that happens in the New Testament is working toward this one point. There's a hill outside of Jerusalem called Golgotha. And on that hill, there are three crosses. On the central cross, God hangs. The Son of God, equal to God, chose not to be equal to God, became himself humble and came to live in the form of a man to accomplish what God wanted done. But with all the good he's done, all the people he's healed, the dead he's raised, the deaf he made to hear, they killed him. And that's what's going to be the center of everything, and that's the story. But God doesn't tell it just that way. There are three crosses. And I want you to remember this. There are two people there, one on each side. One of them who's saying, if you are the Son of God, come down off the cross and save me. Now what he means is get me off the cross. But he doubts that he's the Son of God. On the other, there is a man of equal guilt who says to him, why don't you shut up? That's being crude, but that's what he's really saying. We're here because we're guilty and he's not. And he turns to Jesus, the only man who confesses him in this whole period of time or believes there's anything past his death. Peter doesn't believe it. John doesn't believe it. When Jesus is resurrected, they all deny it because they don't believe it. But here is a man, a thief on a cross, who says, "When you come into your kingdom, remember me." It must have been the one thing God did to give him a little bit of comfort in that hour. And he says, "You'll be with me today in paradise." Now, we're all thieves on the cross. We're all thieves on the cross. It's not a matter of whether we are or whether we aren't. But your story is, which one of them are you? Are you the one who says, "If you can help me out, I'd really like for you to, Lord"? Or are you the one who says, "I believe, I'm guilty, but I just want to be with you"? You know the answer to that. The only answer. We have to be the penitent on the cross, waiting for the day when we will be with him in paradise. Will you stand and sing with me?